You've tuned in to Misbehaving, a podcast where we get up close and personal with today's most imaginative authors. Every episode, we'll be sitting down with a new writer to discuss their magical world, futuristic visions, and how they bring their wildest ideas to the page. Sitting in for my wonderfully missing in action partner is, again, the wonderful in action, Jen Nixon. Jen, how was your week?
Pretty good. It's getting a little cold here over on the East Coast, but, you know, it's almost Christmas time, so that's to be expected.
Are you ready? Are you bracing right now?
I bought two things so far.
Okay.
So, score. All right, good. How was your week?
Oh, my gosh, it rained here.
Oh, but I hear you went on vacation.
That was last week. Yeah, we 20th anniversary, 20 years married to my lovely, lovely wife. And we went with her sister and brother-in-law, who were married just 2 months after us. They were married in December. So it was both our 20th anniversaries.
Fantastic.
And we went on a cruise. We went out of Port LA up to San Francisco. We were going to stop in Santa Barbara, but we were like, nah, we're not stopping in Santa Barbara. So we went down to San Diego, then down to Ensenada and back up to Port of LA. It was great. Oh, wow. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
We were on Princess. Princess caters to an older crowd, which was pretty obvious. And so I did not run into a lot of children, but I was stymied by a lot of older folk who did not move fast.
Yeah.
But
that'll do it.
Yeah, that was the trip.
Great,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So who do we have on the podcast today?
So glad you asked. Today we have Jeff Rooner. He/she/they is an award-winning freelance journalist from Houston who specializes in social justice and the weirdest things he can find. He has published two books of horror fiction, The Rook Circle and Stranger Worlds, both of which have been linked to laughing uneasily in the dark in multiple studies. Before writing, he was, in no particular order, a hypnotist, a luchador, the host of the Black Math Experiment, and a drag performer. He does all his Christmas stocking shopping at the National Museum of Funeral History and owns a tooth fairy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jeff.
Welcome, welcome.
Howdy, Rob Roy. Hi, Jen. It is so wonderful to speak with you.
Glad to have you. How's it going?
It's going fine. I did Thanksgiving shopping today.
Ooh.
And when my wife was in nursing school, I was like full-time taking care of the kid, right? So whenever we had to do Thanksgiving shopping, I had to drag around a six-year-old, an eight-year-old. And the way I got them to behave in the store was I framed it as a ninja mission. And I would tell them, like, all right, there's going to be like old ladies going to fight you for the last can of yams, and mom needs yams. You understand me? So you see her reach for that last can. You need to sneak in there, break her knee, and get out before she can grab at you. And it's all nonsense, you know, it's all nonsense, but I would sit there and they would take it like really seriously. So like the whole time we're shopping, like, you know, for sugar and stuff, they're like looking at us like, I see that person, they're going for the cocoa. I'm going to jump on their back. And I'm like, yes, you are. That's exactly what you're doing. And they just turned 14, and I dropped them off today at their girlfriend's house. And I was coming back, like, I'm going to do the shopping real quick before I go do this podcast. And I'm sitting there doing my shopping, and I look around and I realize I don't have a tiny assassin behind me for the first time ever. It's like there's no voice in my head going, it's like, I got to kill those people or we're never going to get cream corn, man. So it was the saddest murder mission I've ever been on.
Aww. Yeah, they do grow up fast, don't they?
Yeah, if you feed them, which I did.
Yep. So, that's good.
That is the lesson we should all take away.
And it sounds like you're giving them a wonderful imagination to grow up with.
They are continuing the proud Rounder legacy of being a twisted weirdo. Yes.
Love it. We definitely need more of those people. So I also knew you from our mutual publishing company, CHBB, Crushing Hearts and Butterflies.
Yes.
And you write fiction and you write nonfiction. So I have my first question, which is going to be hard, of course. Which do you like more and which is harder?
I would say they're both equally hard in different ways. I'll start with that. Because when I get things wrong in nonfiction, because my day job is as a journalist, I get crazy people screaming at me.
I know.
Jen has seen me on Facebook where I have a whole series about the unhinged people that choose to hit send at me. But the meanest email I ever got in 15 years as a journalist was somebody who was mad about something I said about a long dead classical pianist. I got some minor thing wrong. And this person threatened me with horrors that I cannot imagine. And imagining horrors is one of my other jobs. So, so that's hard. You know, hard for fiction is just, you know, the hardest thing there is just you have to avoid falling into bad ideas and bad tropes and everything because you get tired and, you know, your brain is set up to, you know, run in the same grooves. So that's the difficult thing. Of the two, I prefer to write fiction because I enjoy being God.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun, you know, and they're fictional people. So if they die, I just resurrect them. It's not a problem. So.
Exactly. Especially if you do sci-fi, you just, you know, make something up.
I do horror. I pull people out of graves all day long. It's fine. Better
necromancy.
Yes.
And Jeff, what are your favorite and your least favorite tropes?
My least favorite trope is I really dislike when marginalized people have to die to move a story forward. And that was one of the ones I fell into. I was working on a story. My newest project is something called Necro Yummicon, which is
Jen loves, like, which she is on board.
You gotta hook it. Me and the title,
right? And that's the one
made me
right
giggle
there.
So I'm hoping
that's awesome
or a comedy, right?
The whole idea is, you know how, if especially this time of year, you're going down recipe blogs, but you can't just get to the recipe, right? They have to tell you why. They have to tell you about their girlhood in rural Vermont and why this macaroni and cheese is essential to it. So I thought, man, you could like hide a murder confession in here and nobody would ever know. So the whole collection is just horror blogs, as horror stories disguised as food blogs. And I was writing about this turkey chili that I make that my wife really loves. And I was thinking about my brother, who is autistic, has anxiety. I don't see him in person a lot. And, you know, every year I say, he's like, do you want to come to Thanksgiving? If you don't want to come to Thanksgiving, it's perfectly fine. He's like, I just don't think I'm up for it. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I love you. It's fine. But it got me thinking about just how hard the world is to people who are neurodivergent at the level that my brother is. So I wrote this story about a guy who would bring food to his uncle every Monday. And then his uncle, then weird horror things happened. In my original draft of the story, the uncle died. He died in a really strange sort of suicide. And I gave it to a friend of mine to read. And she was like, so you're just killing the neurodivergent character. Like, that's not really cool. And I was like, and I realized that was just me being tired and being ready to be done with the story and being sad about my brother, who was very much alive. And it's like, I'm channeling my worries. So I went back and I rewrote it, and now he like lives, and it's a much better story. So it's so easy to fall into that trope. And I hate myself that I did so. And I hate watching other people do it.
Yeah, but you broke the pattern. So that's the most important.
Exactly. It's like, and that's how we grow as people. So we always break the pattern. Mm-hmm. My favorite trope, my absolute favorite trope, is people who have to work in a horrific situation because capitalism is crushing them. I love it when people have horrible, soul-crushing jobs that they have to endure because there is nothing else. I'm very labor punk. That's one of my favorite things in the world. So I write a lot of stories. Yeah, labor punk. And I write a lot of stories. Yeah. It's like, so that's my favorite thing. Like Five Nights at Freddy's or Willy's Wonderland, that kind of thing.
Gosh.
I love the idea that it's like, well, why are you working in a place where the animatronics are trying to kill you? It's like, because I need $250. That's
right.
Why.
I got to make rent.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not going on a quest for self-discovery. I'm going on a quest for green beans,
right,
man.
The real horror here is being homeless, right? That's
yes.
That's the horror.
So those are my favorites.
Nice. I love it. I love it.
It's great. And you've had a lot of different jobs. Have you used any of those past jobs to, you know, form a character?
Constantly. I mean, when I was a drag performer, I did the Rocky Horror Picture Show for 10 years. I actually dropped out of college to run it. And that's how I met my wife. And I met a lot of questionable human beings being in that specific cult, you know? So I take that with me all the time, like all the good people, all the terrible people, they've shown up in so many books. But mostly I take from other people's experiences. I like to read about other people. I'm a journalist, so I interview so many people about their lives, and it's more fun exploring things I don't already know and learning about people. So that's,
yeah, I hear that. Your turn, Rob.
Always in my turn again. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I only have questions. Like I just have a whole list of questions. So Jeff, I know that you're pretty confident person these days. And but I'm wondering if, like me, you had a shy, awkward phase that you could share with us and how you broke free of that.
I would love to share that story. Unfortunately, it would be a lie. I have.
Oh no! Oh, you crushed my soul.
I have been on stage since I was like 7 years old. Like wow. when I was a little kid, all I wanted to do was grow up and be a stage actor. And like people would ask me that, and I would say I want to be a stage actor. And like the second I could get into high school theater, I did. And I went to University of Houston to be a stage actor. And the only reason that dream stopped is because I met other stage actors and I realized if I had to be around them all the time, I was going to kill everyone and then myself. And he's right here. No, it's like so I got into producing for a while, and I realized no, the murder is still like it's coming, like sure as sunset, man. So, but no, I've always been outgoing, ready to talk to people. The weirdest thing about it is I have this horrible anxiety disorder. Like if I have to call somebody and talk to them for an interview, it takes me like 3 tries and I have to sit on my hands so I don't actually hang up the phone because they're shaking so bad. And it's not even for like rock stars or politicians or anything. It's just for regular people. Mm-hmm. So I'm driven by this constant demon of anxiety, and it only goes away when I'm standing in front of people and talking. It's the only time I ever feel quiet.
That's the only time I have anxiety is when people want me to talk. I can sing in front of a crowd, but I cannot talk in front of a crowd.
There will
without
be no
turning
talking from
tomato.
Jen. Yeah. No 10-minute discourse. It's just all.
But singing. I'll just sing you my book. That's what I'll do.
That's awesome. No, I love that. It immediately made me think of my youngest, who is dramatic all the time, unless you put him in front of a crowd. And I've never seen this, like never. I'm a speech debate coach. I've been coaching for almost 20 years. I've never actually seen stage fright like this. He just deer in the headlights. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but we practiced this and you had it memorized and you were making me crack up about it. And like, nope, once he's up on the stage, he's done. It was like, oh my gosh, that's a thing. It's a real, real, real thing. Like I freak out a little bit. Yeah, oh, okay.
I talk about my kid. They were in their first play. Their school did a production of Clue, right? Mm, and they did the singing Telegram Girl. So they're on for just one scene. They're like the singing telegram. Bang. Oh, yeah. And yeah. It's which, by the way, watching all the gunfights in high school is very triggering. But aside from that,
yeah,
the whole time they're doing this, they're like, you know, I don't know if I'm enjoying theater because they're not like interacting with other people. They're not getting that back and forth, right? And I kept telling them, it was like, look, just get through this. When you get on stage and you do this bit and you fall down, the whole audience is going to laugh and you're going to feel more powerful than you've ever felt in your life.
It's the best part of the whole movie.
Yeah, it's like, as opening night, and they fall down and like the just crowd just loses it. They're just like laughing. And they're like, you were right. It's like, yeah, see, it's addictive. It is so addictive.
Yeah, the crowd. It's the energy and the laughter and yeah, all that.
That's how you become a cult leader, which is my retirement plan.
Your retirement plan. Are you going to revolve it around your books or what's the plan with that?
I'm thinking aliens would be like a very benevolent.
I'm in.
Like a very benevolent UFO cult, you know, just tell people like, yeah, they're going to come down and everything is going to be great. We just have to prepare. And I'll just give them a bunch of busy work. I'll just tell them like, all right, we have to start our own winery. You know, because the alien spaceship runs on wine. I mean, I'm making it up. It doesn't matter.
The sewers have to be cleaned out because
sewers have to be. We have to all spend exactly 7 minutes and 80 seconds at a soup kitchen every week. That's how we do. It's, you know, you give people that. It's like the cult will run itself. It's great. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it does need to have that little tinge of crazy in there, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like if it's just totally acceptable stuff, like, hey, plant a tree. They're like, okay. Like you're clearly not a cult. That's not religious enough.
You know, that's the best thing about writing fiction, especially about writing horror, is because if you continue to introduce just enough insanity into the world, it's almost like a vaccine. It inoculates you against the nonsense that we're all forced to participate in anyway. And once you know I think it was Stephen King who once said that if 100 adults come up with a vampire, a child will be the one who figures out that you had to put a stake through its heart. And right. I think that, you know, controlled burst of madness is really the best way to do that in the world on a societal scale.
Mm-hmm. This episode of Myth Behaving is brought to you by the Bath Bomb Diva, producing fine handcrafted bath bombs and shower steamers, scents ranging from fruits to florals to musks and more. An observation of Mariah Carey's annual teeth gnashing, mouth foaming rampage through modern civilization, the Diva offers up new holiday goodness with fizzy, fragrant bath salts and bubble bath bomb hot tubs. These great stocking stuffers made with wonderful scents such as warm vanilla sugar, sugar cookie, and comfort and joy. What does comfort and joy smell like? Beats me. But they all include small toy surprises like bendable figures, flashing LED light cubes, and cool toy erasers that are sure to delight. 4 out of 5 people randomly surveyed at my house show that even the most stubborn anti-bather will absolutely look forward to jumping into a tub made wondrous and magical by the Bath Bomb Diva. Thanks, as always, to Bath Bomb Diva for being a valued sponsor to the show. I got to know, can you talk about the Tooth Fairy?
I'm on Zoom, so I could show it to you, but it's packed away in a box right now because I was doing it for an
can
event.
It breathe? Is it okay?
It is mounted in a little clock dome, and it is a large tooth. I believe it's a deer tooth, but it might be from just a really big person. And it's got dragonfly wings that are super glued to it. And so it is a tooth fairy. And the reason I always talk about it is because whenever I go to live events and people come up like, oh, books, I don't care. Then they start to walk away. It's like, would you like to see my tooth fairy? And they stop and they go, yeah. And I hold it up and they get the joke and they start to laugh. And then it's like, you know, and if you like twisted, weird stuff with a little humor in it, I do books, you know.
There you go.
That tooth fairy, I spent $50 on it from a very disreputable person in in West Virginia. I had no idea if they were actually going to send it to me or not, but I have made like 4 times my investment back just selling books. It's the greatest hook. It's better than cookies, you know, that's when you're trying to reel people in.
Candy. I used to just, hey, you want a piece of candy?
Yeah.
Piece of candy?
Oh my gosh, the two of you. You should get a van.
Yeah, exactly.
If I had a van where I just drove around and like charged people a couple bucks to show them oddities, like I totally would do that. Man, that sounds better than an ice cream truck.
Yeah, I'll just get an alien in a glass and call it my alien fairy.
Right. I've got a friend who collects animal penises and she keeps them in jars. And every time I run across one in the wild, because here's the thing about collecting like bones and animal parts and stuff is that people will know that that is you. And if they happen to run across those things, they will all send it to you. Like my mom, my mom said, it's like, you know, I find bones all the time on my land. Would you like me to put them in a box for you? And I'm like, yes, mom. Yes, I would absolutely love that. Thank you so much. You get me.
And I really wanted you to put in quotes, find.
Yes,
bones on my land, they just appear.
It's, you know, I did last year, I wrote an article about if you wanted to buy a human skull for Christmas.
I remember that one.
And you wanted to, I don't know, send it to your wife as a, you know, some sort of hint. It's actually very hard. But if you live in Houston, I highly recommend everybody dig around in their backyard a little bit, because about 8 human skulls have just been found in backyards in the Houston area over the last 6 years. Which, I don't know if that's a lot. It seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot. Definitely seems like a lot.
Like, is this a Richard III thing? Are any of them like, we can tie them back to something super famous?
Unfortunately, no. Although there were
random skulls.
There was a rumor because John Wilkes Booth's body was stolen.
Right.
Not John Wilkes Booth. I'm sorry. Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, okay.
He was from Texas. Sorry. Lee Harvey Oswald's body was stolen for once. And the dudes were going to hold it for ransom because sometimes criminals are not very smart.
Right.
And there was this conspiracy theory for a while that they never recovered the body. And they like, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald was just buried somewhere in the Texas area. So, you know, people would find a skull and they was like, I wonder if it's Lee Harvey Oswald. It's like, it's not.
So Texas has their own, is Jimmy Hoffa buried under their thing?
Yeah.
We have in the Northeast. That's nice.
That's nice.
It's
because it's usually a Jersey thing. I didn't expect to hear it when I moved to Pennsylvania, and I actually heard it in Pennsylvania like 2 weeks ago. I'm like, wow, you guys talk about Jimmy Hoffa up here?
Oh, I mean, in Houston's case, it's because the whole city is built on the dead, right?
Yeah.
When this city was founded, it was founded by two dudes named the Allen Brothers, and they put out all these ads telling people, you got to come to Houston because the cool coastal breezes are just amazing. And there's absolutely no mosquitoes or death here. And then people came and there was mosquitoes and death here. And like a third of the people who moved here initially just all died. Mm. And there was no graveyard yet. So they just buried them where they fell.
Wherever. Man. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
local history.
I'm working on a book for the National Museum of Funeral History, actually, mm-hmm. about like graves and the dead of Houston. So mm-hmm.
That's what I was actually going to be my next question was, have you used Houston since it's a big part of your life in any of your fiction?
Absolutely. My absolute favorite Houston story is from a Senseless Eating Machine, which was from Something Lurks in the Water. I think you and I were both in that collection. And yes. All right. And what happens is there's the aquarium set up, the aquarium chain of restaurants down here, but they also run like an actual aquarium. And among those things is a little choo-choo train that goes through a tunnel full of sharks. And again, when my kid was very, very young and my wife was doing nursing school and then working the night shift, and I had to get them out of the house, we went to the aquarium a lot because it was cheap. You could spend $20 and be there the whole day. So we would just ride this shark train over and over and over again. And at the very end, they tell you, it's like, hey, no, one of our sharks has escaped. And they have a knockoff Jaws head. It's just the head. It's just the head. It's in a puddle of water that looks like a dog pool, like it's that small, but right. It comes up and it like bites at you, and the kid just like, oh, I love this. So I wrote an entire story that's in the Rook Circle about how this shark head downloads a bad like Microsoft update and starts like trying to attack people, and so the shark just starts like crawling out of the hole and coming after people. It doesn't have any fins, it's just a head on a piston. But I thought that was a real fun story. So yeah, I love that, and it takes place during a hurricane, and I've lived through, I think, 6 hurricanes at this point. I've been homeless from one of them once, you know. Ugh. it's really a, you know, what does I always say is like flood is the god of Houston. And so whenever it rains here, I'm always thinking about the deities that live here. The first novel I wrote, the second novel I wrote, it hasn't been published yet, is about the idea that the Texas Medical Center is a Lovecraftian deity that just exists across time, because it's enormous. And if you've never been to the Texas Medical Center, it's the most haunted place ever. The air is like weird and greasy and filmy. And even for people who have worked there for years, it's a maze that goes up and down. You'll find yourself on the third floor when you absolutely did not go upstairs or downstairs. It is an Escher painting full of cancer and weirdness. And I don't, and wow. So yeah, I love Houston. This city is so haunted and twisted and forgotten. I've never leave it.
Do you guys have a weird Houston? Like, we have a weird Jersey magazine that started way, way back, probably in the 80s or 90s. And I think they branched out to other towns. See if you could see that, if you find that in your Barnes & Noble, weird. Like, it's just its own brand, weird, and then it'll be weird Houston. They might want you to write for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you throw money at me, I'll catch it. I have very good reflexes.
Yeah, and you know a lot of weird stuff, so yeah. I'll look it up for you and figure that out. And you're very active on social media. What are your favorite platforms these days? They change every other month.
Mm-hmm. My favorite place to be, because I am a person who misses LiveJournal, is Facebook. I enjoy just the presentation of it. But as far as like as an author where I am, I spend most of my time on TikTok, because every Friday I put out what I call the Friday Nightmare, which is a horror story that's usually 2 minutes or less. So I'll get on and I will, you know, I'll tell something really, really creepy and twisted and short, and then I'm just done, and I'm done for the week. And it's really awesome. And when I was at an event recently, I sold out of all my books and I had some of these stories memorized. So I was like, hey, if you've got 30 seconds, I could tell you a horror story. And since I don't have any books for buying, like, all right, do it. And I would just stand up, recite, and then sit down, and then everybody would look dazed, like somebody had just hit them in the back of the head with a baseball bat. It's like,
wow. That's great. I wish I could do that. Like, remember short little, I mean, I'm a pretty good storyteller, like in front of my friends and stuff. But like we said, the anxiety of like saying
on the spot,
on the spot, I just can't do it. But that would be actually a really good idea to have like clips of your stuff memorized.
You want to hear one? I can do one real quick.
Absolutely.
You
know what?
We do. We absolutely do.
All right. This is my favorite. It's called Don't. See, I moved into my house, and from years I've just lived in an apartment, so I didn't know how to fix anything. So the first time I moved into my house and the power went out, I went to go look at the fuse box as if I was going to know what to do. I open it up in the dark there, and everything's neatly labeled, you know, master bedroom, kitchen, AC, all that stuff. But down at the bottom right, there's one that only has one word. It just says, don't. And the power eventually came back on. And in Texas, whenever the power comes on, you feel the air conditioning just kind of kiss you on the head. You're filled with this great sense of relief. But I couldn't feel that because I couldn't get that word out of my head, don't. I would hear it in my sleep as I was trying to dream, just don't. And I woke up and found myself standing in front of the fuse box again in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. And when I reached my hand up to flick that breaker, it almost sounded like it said don't. And there was nothing for a few minutes. And then there was a sound from underneath the earth, like strangled whale song, this horrible keening of something large and afraid and angry that was dying. My vision went blurry because the aqueous humor in my eyeballs had started to boil and fizz like a shaken soda. I could feel dread, not as like an emotion, but as a physical thing that was reaching around me, grabbing me in a hug, putting its hands down my throat and into my ears. My hand felt like 1,000 pounds as I reached up to flick that breaker back. And then later, after I had calmed down some, I went back out there with a Sharpie and underlined, don't.
That was amazing.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Totally worth it. I'm giving you claps and snaps. That was freaking brilliant. And your stage, I can see him, audience. Sorry, you can't. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, your stage performance definitely helps all the stage stuff you did. You should write in first person, only in first person forever.
I
don't like first person, but I would read that.
I was in a band for years. That's what the whole Black Math Experiment thing is. I always say I'm the host because we had my sister was the actual singer, and I would just yell at people because I can't carry a tune in a bucket. And so, you know, I'm used to, I love being on stage. I love telling stories that way. And I finally getting to start doing that in public. Like I went out and read some of these, like it was an open mic night. And I was like, well, I'm just going to do horror stories instead of comedy. It'll be fun. And indeed it was.
I bet it was. That's awesome. You definitely should do that one everywhere you possibly can, because that is a great story. Well done, Jeff, with one.
Don't. That's nice.
Maybe you should get Jordan Peele. He can put it, it's one of those one word things. He can do a short. That would be great.
You got to love that Jordan Peele has had 3 movies and combined the titles are like 9 words.
Yeah.
And I could only watch 2 of them. Like there was one, I'm like, nope, 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 nope. I'm out.
Yeah,
it wasn't nope.
It wasn't nope.
My wife can't watch Us because she's terrified of doppelgangers.
That's the one.
It's like everything's got somebody there for something they're afraid of. I can't do heights. Yeah. Like there was a movie about 2 girls who climbed a disused radio tower, and then the ladder fell away. And I just saw the trailer. I'm like, not in this lifetime, brother. No.
No.
Yeah, mine's,
you know,
mine's
heights
spiders.
Didn't... Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, it was just mine's spiders.
Yeah, I not a fan. Like I got plenty. I got plenty of little phobias that I am not interested in. But heights didn't used to bother me. And so long as I'm the one doing the heights, they still don't really bother me too much. But watching somebody else do it after being I was a climber for a few years, and watching somebody else, I just know. Like if you slip, I know what happens.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be a smear, man. Yep.
My hands get all kinds of sweaty and it's hard to. So I used to like to watch climbing documentaries, and then it was just too much. It's too much anxiety for some of those guys. I'm like, oh, you're not clipped in, right? You're not. Oh, no, that's bad.
Oh, jeez.
I know. Right. Right.
It definitely sounds anxiety.
Right. And I did it to myself, apparently. So Jeff, I got to ask, when you're writing. And it sounds like you write a lot, like,
yeah.
And so we're not talking like in the shower, when you actually sit down at your keyboard or wherever you write, what's your go-to snack, food or drink? Like what's got to be on hand?
I always tell people that I have a drinking problem. because I was in a mental home for it, but also because if I'm not literally drinking something at all times when I'm working, I'm completely anxious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for years, that was alcohol. But then when I quit that, I was drinking like a case of Coke Zero a day, which it's one of those things like, you know, aspartame will cause cancer. I was like, well, yeah, only if you're drinking like an enormous amount of and I realized that I had reached that level. I'm like, oh, this actually might kill me. So I am one of those obnoxious people who's gone right into the flavored seltzers. And I'm currently drinking a Waterloo Cherry Limeade, and it is absolutely wonderful. But otherwise, I love trail mix. That's my thing. It's like I literally just have a bucket up here. If I could strap it to my face and eat like a horse, I absolutely would. It's like I am very efficient. So
nice.
That's awesome. No, so the question is, we did it again.
I know, we do it all the
twinsies
time.
Twinsies. Yep. All right, you go. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I'm not quite to that level, but I do like to have something at hand to drink. And usually I've got this 32-ounce. And I got a pink one because I didn't want anybody to mistake it, this pink water bottle that I covered with Lord of the Rings stickers all over the place. So nobody would mistake it. Yeah. But I've got
two of the gayest things ever.
Right. Like I just dialed into both of those. That's like, yeah, nobody's going to mistake this one. And they haven't. Nobody's stolen my water bottle. So. All right,
awesome.
Jen, you're up. You're up, Jen.
All right. Well, I have to ask the question that, you know, every author has to get asked because, you know, writers and readers like to know. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Pantser. I take outlines out behind a shed and shoot them. I mean, look, halfway through a book, especially if I'm doing a short story, no, I will not outline that. You can't make me. You're not my real dad. But if it's a novel, like I'll get halfway through, I'm like, all right, I better go chart some of this out. But yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen. I just have a weird image in my head, and I throw 500 words at it until it makes sense. Mm.
Ooh, weird image in your head. Do you actually see images in your head if you close your eyes and picture an apple? Can you see an apple in your head? And if you can, what level? Is it like fully red, kind of red, or like a shadow?
Well, I mean, number one, I'm colorblind, so
okay,
so I don't. But
there's no colors then.
So what is red? Yeah.
So it's like, but you know, I was a hypnotist for several years. In fact, I still do it occasionally, professionally. So hypnotism is at its core just really, really, really intense make-believe. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very lucid dream kind of a person. I will sit there and I will meditate on an idea. And yeah, I'll see the red of an apple. I'll see the bite taken out of it. I'll see the monster holding it, all of it. I think in pictures.
So does hypnotism rely on pictures? Is that maybe that's why it doesn't work on me? Because I can't see images in my head at all. My brother can, my mom can't. And my aunt can.
It's one of those things like pictures is useful because that's how a lot of us do think. Mm-hmm. But you can work around that. There's, you know, there's so many, you know, you can just tell people how to feel. You don't have to have them actually look at something. It's like,
okay.
And they, when I was learning, they actually taught me, it's like, don't say words like see. I was like, you see a forest, you see a blackboard. It's like, you just say, imagine a forest. Mm-hmm. Because if I say, imagine a forest, right. You have a conception of a forest, even if you're not looking at trees.
That's smart. Yeah. Because I learned this whole thing recently that I don't see anything in my head. I see nothing. And apparently it affects like 3% of the population, whatever. So I it made me realize like a lot of my characters see things in their head because I thought it was like a magic trick. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a freaking superpower, a supernatural thing, you know, imagine something in your mind's eye. I'm like, I don't see any of that. So it must be a superpower. And now I learned it's not.
You're just lucky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got a manuscript back from a beta reader the other day, and they said, it's like, I just love how you write neurodivergent characters. And I responded, it's like, oh, I just write what I know. And they're like, I should go get tested.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I think at this point we're all a little, we all have our own little quirks. I think we're all a little neurodivergent in some way, to be honest with you.
I would trust nobody who hasn't suffered irreparable damage over the last 8 years. Like if you got through this normal, I want eyes on you at all times because I don't trust you.
Yeah, totally. But it makes for good fiction writing, I'll tell you that much.
Oh yeah, and it's one of the things that I write about whenever I write antagonist is just how aggressively normal they are and how horrifying I find that idea. Just somebody who is so plugged into the American dream and everything like that. They're there. Mm. They're like they rocked out of a 50s sitcom. Like I find all of that horrifying.
Yeah. Like if it was really that way. Oh yeah. No. That is not an ideal situation. Yeah. No, I'm on that. All right. Good. Well, I think I've got the last question, Jen.
Yes, you do. You do. Okay.
So Jeff, I'm going to give you just a touch of background because I'm going to say a name in here and I want you to know why. So I love movies. So when Entertainment Weekly came out, like I got the biggest subscription they could give me. And then they shut down about, I think like a year ago, they shut down.
Yep. Yep.
But they had a partner, you know, they were under an umbrella. And so they gave me free of charge, like a 2-year subscription to People magazine, which I kind of loathe. Like the royal family appears in every other issue and I'm so tired of it. But every now and then they have a really cool article and they had one this past one. And the question that hit me, that's where I got it. I just stole it from that. And I was like, oh, that's a great question. I'm going to steal that question. And so you get that question, but I just wanted you to know I stole it from People magazine. And I don't want you to think bad of me because I read People magazine.
I do too. It's in my bathroom.
See, there you go. That's where mine is. It's in the bathroom. So
don't worry. I think bad about you for totally different reasons.
Excellent.
Yes.
And I'm sure those are the right ones. I didn't want them to be the wrong ones. So. Okay. So are you ready? Are you ready for the question?
Yes, sir.
What was your last act of self-care?
I love it. That's in the back, all the way in the back when it interviews the last page, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, that's where you got mm-hmm. it from. I know. Mm-hmm.
Dig in the grave for the person who asked me that question.
No. Free grave.
No. I'll give you a real answer. My last act of self-care was I pre-ordered Super Mario RPG, the remake for the Nintendo Switch, because I played it endlessly when I was a little kid. And last night it came out and I brought it home and I played it for 3 hours straight, which is very, very hard with some of my mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And I was just happier than I had ever been. Nice. So
that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think that's why we asked that. I love that question because
that's a great question.
It's also silly, but it's like, yeah, what did you do that was so cool that you just loved that moment? And yeah, I love that. So that's
I got a London Fog iced latte this morning. Ooh, that was mine.
Nice. That does sound, it's almost cider weather. And that's all I want to do is I want to sit outside, watch a fire, yeah, read about like haunted lighthouse mm-hmm. lesbian keepers and just nice. Which is the book I just read by Bone Light by Holly Lynn Walrath. And it's like, and she sent it to me, it's like, I have these two lesbian women who run a haunted lighthouse. Do you want to read that? I'm like, yes, please.
Of course,
add
absolutely.
Me at haunted lighthouse.
Here's $16.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Jeff, where can people find you? I know you mentioned Facebook and TikTok. Where are, is that all your socials?
I am the only Jeff Rauner on planet Earth. So if you type in J-E-F space R-O-U-N-E-R into anything, I am the only thing that will come up. So you can find me on, I've got a Twitter, I've got a Blue Sky, I've got a TikTok, but I mostly hang out on Facebook.
Nice.
And you can find all of my books at Amazon. And like I said, every Friday on TikTok about 9 o'clock or whenever I remember, I put up a brand new story. And this last one was about crazy people who live in vans and film it on TikTok. So that was fun.
Oh, perfect. Nice. Perfect. Well, Jen, we've done it again. We've interviewed another wonderful, wonderful author.
Yes, absolutely.
When does he show up?
Yeah. That went on right before you, Jeff.
Oh, okay, you missed it.
I'm the cleanup crew. That's
you'll have to come back.
No, you have to come back. Let us know when you've got something else coming out, and we will absolutely have you back on. Jen, it's been a pleasure as always.
Always. We'll see you after Thanksgiving. Everybody has a good holiday.
Yeah, this show does go on a brief hiatus for the Thanksgiving holiday, the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. So everybody enjoy your day, even if you don't celebrate. And Jen, we will talk again later.
Have a great week, everyone. Mm-hmm.